For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Over and Back's Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s. Today's mystery is, why were there so many playoff upsets? All right, welcome back to Over and Back. I'm Jason, and with me as usual is Rich, and we are talking about the 1970s, of course, and it is time for extreme parity in both leagues, but in particular the NBA.
It's just nuts. I mean, some of the numbers and some of the like all time, you know, it's just staggering how much parity there was in the NBA and the ABA and just in general in this 1970s. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So there are eight different NBA champs in the 70s. And to put that in perspective, the 80s have four, the 90s have four, the 2000s have five, the 2010s actually have six so far in 7 years. We're going to look into this further and find that I think that the 2010s actually have more parity than I think is generally thought about.
Considering superstars are ruining the league by coming together to, you know, congregate on teams and steal the NBA. Yeah, it's kind of funny how it's still, you know, not really.
At least when it comes to championships and playoff upsets, we're still, yeah, there is a decent amount of parity. And it's some circumstances behind that, injuries or what have you, but it's interesting anyway. ABA, there were four champs in seven seasons. So there were... the Pacers won back-to-back titles in 72 and 73. There were no back-to-back champs between 70 and 1988 when the Lakers finally won their back-to-back. So there's very much we've talked about before, there's very much a lack of dynasty. The difference between the win totals of the best team and the win totals of the worst team very much compressed during this time. Like, for example, in the 73 season, the best team had 68 wins. There was the Celtics. The worst team had 9 wins, the 76ers. And 7 out of the 17 teams in the league had between 30 and 50 wins. And that rate increased dramatically. In the 1977 merger season, the best team in the league had 53 wins. The worst team had 22. And 20 out of the 22 teams had between 30 and 50 wins. And that trend would continue for another couple of years. So from 74 through 79, those numbers were fairly similar. The highest win total during that time was 60. The lowest win total during that time was 22. So, you know, no teams having any wins in the teams and almost no teams having wins, you know, 60 plus during that time is really interesting. 80 comes along, Magic and Bird join the league, some added superstar power, and then that disparity kind of jumps up again, you know, as the rest of the decade goes along. But there's a really interesting, you know, blip of 5 or 6 years where there's real extreme parity in the league. And a lot of it is the merger and the influx of talent in the merger, but that's not the complete explanation, because 74 through 76 is very much that way as well.
Right. Yeah. So there's more at hand than just simply, you know, merging the two leagues and adding a bunch of new talent or adding a bunch of new teams. Like, there's something else, you know, cooking there, to say the least.
Yeah. And I think some of that can be explained by, you know, the expansion of the late 60s and early 70s, that those expansion drafts and ABA competition helped dilute the league in the late 60s and early 70s. So, you know, as those years kind of progress, it's harder to, you know, if you're a good team or a great team, it's harder to get influx of really good players. And it's harder, you know, if you're a middling team to, you know, get a great player too. It's only really, the draft is now only really helping a smaller number of teams, unless you get lucky with a late round steal. The Lakers and the Knicks of the early 70s, who were kind of the, you know, the exceptional teams before this period of parity starts, they were built largely before this expansion ABA diluted the draft pool. So, you know, their superstars were all guys who came from the early 60s and such. And the Knicks were built, you know, in mid 60s drafts that happened largely before expansion began. The Bucks are kind of an exception to that because, you know, they lucked into getting Kareem, who was
right. And that's an all you need, really.
Yeah. Who's the one exception. And because they got Kareem, they got Oscar, you know, that superstar, even though he was aging, still a superstar level player. So those were kind of like the three teams who sort of bucked that trend, at least in the early part of the decade. And then once those teams age and once, you know, Kareem leaves and goes to the Lakers, a diluted Lakers team, there's not really a super team to fill that vacuum until, you know, the 80 season or so.
Yeah. Which is interesting. There's a few different theories, and we're going to talk about a few here. One part of me initially, and again, I haven't done like a ton of research on this, and this is something I really think that would be cool to kind of dig into again, and maybe for a future episode, we really go deep into it and kind of try to investigate it even a little bit more than we're going to do here. But, you know, there's something to be said for free agent movement as well. And this is the first decade where we really kind of noticed a lot of players deciding that they control where they want to go and they kind of do their stuff. So that, I think, plays a little bit of a part in it, but not enough to make it as big of a parody as there is. And we're going to talk about a few other things as well that could have done it. I don't know if it's any one of these things or just a confluence of all of them, you know?
Yeah, and I think the competition's an issue too, I think, because obviously any major free agent jump would require gutting a new team. You know, if competition still existed, Golden State signed Durant now, that probably would have caused the Warriors to have to give the Thunder Klay Thompson or Draymond Green, or possibly both. I mean, that he might be valued in that level. And you know, you look at how the Clippers were gutted when they signed Walton in 79, for instance. They lost Kermit Washington and Kevin Cooner, and, you know, some good players. So that obviously prevents building of super teams, like, you know, at that time. That leads to issues and competition ends after 80 or 81. So that makes a difference. The ABA dispersal draft as well, you know, the merger that evens up some teams. You know, Chicago, who's not very good, gets Artis Gilmore, and suddenly they're pretty good. You think, you know, things like that go on. So we're going to kind of look here at the biggest seven game upsets, because so many of them happen during the 70s. It's really interesting to see of that level how many of them are really from this. We kind of looked at a period from 70 to 81, because there's a couple in 81 that I think spiritually sort of still fit in with the 70s that I think are interesting.
Yeah, so in terms of biggest seven-game upsets, in terms of records, this is the win differential between the two teams. 1975, this is your all-time. St. Louis, the Spirits over the Nets is a 26 win differential. Now we go to the 2007, the Warriors over the Mavs. It's a 25 win difference. Then we go into a glut of 70s. 1972, the Nets over the Colonels, 24 win difference. 1975, the Pacers over the Nuggets, 20 win difference. 1976, the Suns over the Warriors, 17 win difference. And then, as you mentioned, 1981, kind of the spiritual 70s, the Kings over the Suns, a 17 win difference. And then 2016, of course, this past season, the Cavs over the Warriors, 16 win difference, which is tied with a few others as well. But we thought worthy of noting. But yeah, you look at that right there, and that's, you know, it's not necessarily that these teams are, you know, there's a big win difference. You know, we talked about the, you know, teams are a lot more even or whatever. Well, these are teams that are like, the Nets are better than the Spirits. They have 26 more wins than them, but the Spirits still win. Like, that's something that we don't really get as much in today's NBA, where we sort of take it for granted that, you know, the team that's got the more wins is probably the better team and they're going to win. But the 70s, it wasn't that. I mean, there's huge examples right there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, technically 6 if you had the 81, that are just huge differences in wins. And they're just giant upsets that happen, you know, in the 70s. If you go to SRS as well, the biggest upsets in terms of SRS ever, of the top 19, 10 are from 1971 to 1981, which is another just real telling number about just how crazy the upsets were. 75, again, the Spirits over the Nets, 10.6. This is in terms of the difference in SRS. 1972, the Nets over the Colonels. We mentioned that one was poor, 7.78. 2007, the Warriors over the Mavs, which we mentioned before, 7.28. The Hawks over the Magic, 2011. There you go, 2.06 for the Hawks. 1976, the Suns over the Warriors, 5.63. 1981, again, the Kings over the Suns, 5.32. And then, of course, 2016, Cavs or Warriors, 4.93. But again, we see one, two, you know, three, four of those that we mentioned being in the 70s. And again, of that top 19, 10 of the biggest differences of SRS are from 1971 to 1981. So it's just a really telling, weird era for that. It's odd. And then you're probably wondering, you know, well, how does that stack up with other decades or whatever? So the way we did this is, you know, a four difference in SRS and then an 11 win difference in wins, just to kind of give us an idea.
It's either or, not necessarily both.
Yeah, right. And so, yes, they're mildly arbitrary, but hey, go with us. It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want. So 1970 and 1981, 15 of those upsets happened in those. So we're looking at 15. Okay, how does that compare? In the past 30 years, we can only find 14 that match that. Eight of them are since 2010. So again, more to your credit that we are seeing actually a lot more parity than a lot of people think with today's NBA. But yeah, again, you know, 15 in that one decade and then 14 ever since then. Here's the ever since thens: the Rockets Lakers 86, Rockets Suns 95, Rockets Spurs 95, Rockets Magic 95. Good job, Rockets. Lakers Spurs 2001, Warriors Mavs 07, Celtics Cavs 2010, Spurs Grizzlies 11, Hawks Magic 11, Sixers Bulls 2012, Grizzlies Thunder 13, Nets Raptors 2014, and then two from this last past year's: Thunder Spurs 2016 and Cavs Warriors in 2016. But again, like it's undeniable that there were just more upsets in the 70s than any other decade prior, or almost since the NBA. You know, since that, there's been only 14, you know, 15 in that one decade. So yeah, it's an undeniable fact that there were just more upsets.
Yes, and a lot of the ones in over the past, you know, 7-8 years are usually often explained by an injury.
Sixers Bulls, Derrick Rose goes out, you know, there's plenty of that. I think Celtics Cavs, wasn't that Garnett got hurt in that series? Like, yeah, there's so many of these that you look at, and true upsets, you know, of course you got the Warriors Mavs in 07, but a lot of these other ones, like you said, are just like a lot, you know, the Grizzlies Thunder 2013, another injury riddled one. So yeah, there's so many of those that kind of pop up.
Absolutely. So looking at the 70s upsets in more detail, the first one, the 1970 Western Division Finals, the LA Stars beat the Denver Rockets. The Stars had 43 wins. The Rockets had 51 wins. The Stars had Matt Calvin, also Willie Wise, and the Nuggets had Spencer Haywood, who averaged 37 points during the series, Larry Jones and Byron Beck. And we talked about Haywood's season before, but led the entire league in scoring and rebounding, was ABA MVP and Rookie of the Year. The Stars were able to, they acquired a shot blocking center named Craig Raymond over the midseason. He was a really key influence in this upset. The Stars lost game one in overtime in Denver, but then won the next four, including the final game of the series, which was nationally televised from Denver on CBS. The Stars' Merv Jackson hit a clutch baseline jumper over Larry Jones with 16 seconds left to give the Stars a 109-107 lead. The Rockets then had a chance to tie, but Jeff Congdon's mid-range jumper clanged off the rim, and Raymond got the rebound, and the Stars had their 25th victory in the last 32 games. Talked a little bit about this during the Utah Stars podcast. This was right before the Stars would make the finals and then lose in the finals in this series, then move to Utah the next year and win the championship for Zelmo. But I didn't point out necessarily what a big upset this was during this time, and it fit our criteria of there was a more than four SRS difference between the Rockets and the Stars that season.
Yeah, well, now I'll get 1971, the Baltimore Bullets over the New York Knicks. The Bullets had a 0.91 SRS, 42 wins. The Knicks had 5.05 SRS and 52 wins. The Knicks had, of course, Walt Frazier, Dick Barnett, David DeBuscher, Willis Reed, Bill Bradley, and Cassie Russell, so kind of a classic Knicks team there. The Bullets had Earl Monroe, Jack Maron, Fred Carter, Wes Unseld. They also have Kevin Lowry and Gus Johnson. This is the third year in a row that these teams would meet. The Knicks had swept the Bullets in 1969, despite Baltimore having the best record in the league, and then won a seven-game game series in 1970. So in this series, the home team won the first four games. The Knicks grinded out a 89-84 win in game five at Madison Square Garden. The Bolts got the equalizer in game six at the Boston Civics, or the Baltimore Civics, rather, taking down a 113-96 win behind 27 points from Earl Monroe. And then the seventh game was played in New York. Monroe outscored Clyde Frazier 26-13. Marin outscored Bradley 20-13, but it was Fred Carter's decisive jump shot with just over 1 minute remaining that gave Baltimore the game and the series. The Bullets then shocked the Knicks 93-91 to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals for the first time in their franchise's history.
Yes, and Monroe managed to average 24.4 points per game in the series. It was really a great series for them, but it was only the Knicks and the Bullets won. They played six years in a row. They met in the playoffs, and this would be the Bullets' only win, unfortunately, for them. But they were able. Kevin Lockery said that this was the it was really the one of the greatest playoff series for him in his career, basically like winning the championship, because Baltimore was always losing to New York at the time. They, you know, they couldn't beat the Knicks, the Colts couldn't beat the Jets, the Orioles couldn't defeat the Mets, and that was sort of their championship. And then Baltimore in 71 actually did win championships. The Orioles won the World Series, the Colts won the Super Bowl, and the Bulls did go to the NBA Finals, but then they ended up getting swept by the Bucks in four games. So didn't quite work out for them all the way, but still a pretty good run for them.
Not bad for Baltimore. They have not had a lot of that since then.
Not so much. The Bullets Baltimore hasn't. The Bullets franchise had a nice.
The Bullets are fine.
Well, they had a nice little run at the end of the 70s, but then they haven't had so much, unfortunately.
Right, and the Orioles had a great little 70s, but since then, not so much. And the Colts, the Baltimore Colts, have not had a very good run in Baltimore because they're the Indianapolis Colts, and they have a lot of success in Indianapolis, but not so much in Baltimore when their team ran away in overnight in a truck. So.
They got the Ravens, though, so, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, you know, no, that's right. I forget. They won a few. They won, what, two titles with the Ravens?
It's a football question. I don't know.
Yeah, so
I don't know why you're asking me about football.
You and I do. Yes, you and I are huge football fish. No, I had to ask. I honestly have no idea. I believe it's two. That sounds right. That's not our strong suit. So that's we'll not be launching from the Over and Back podcast family. The football podcast will not be happening. Offsides. What would be the kitschy name we would have?
We'll have to think. We'll table that one. We'll have to figure that one out.
All right.
If anyone wants to join the Over
Onside Kick or something like that, or something stupid like that, probably.
So next we have the Eastern Division semifinals, the New York Nets, 44 wins, a 0.21 SRS over the Kentucky Colonels, 68 wins and a 7.9 SRS. In 1972, the Nets winning that series 4-2. Really, this kind of came completely out of nowhere. The Nets had Rick Barry, so they had a superstar. It was his second year there. He had actually stayed healthy the entire season for the first time, averaged 31.5 points per game, which was second in the ABA, but the team was only slightly better. They won four more games that season. They were 44-0 that season. The Colonels were juggernaut. This was Artis Gilmore's rookie year. Louis Dampier was still going strong. Dan Issel was in his second year. The Nets had Bill Melchione, who was a pretty good guard but was aging a little bit. Billy Pult, who was a solid center. And John Roach, who had been a three-time All-American in South Carolina and would actually really be really important in this series because Rick Barry would get strep throat, and then Roach would step up and come through in a huge game four, scoring 32 points and somehow willing a team that was undermanned to be able to beat Issel and Gilmore and the Colonels. Quite an impressive effort. Really just they completely discarded what they usually did and just played a bunch of pick and roll and give and go. And Roach just did a bunch of between the legs, behind the back dribbles. They sort of compare him. There's an SI article just basically comparing him to they call it a late model Pete Maravich haircut flopping, and his pointy pale black Irish face pursed in a boyish mirror of his boldness and backing Kentucky into a desperate corner. So they had a way back then in the Sports Illustrated of painting a picture, but before that they were able to take the advantage. Rick Barry had 50 points in the first game, and Kentucky did win game three, but it was close. And then after that game four, Rocha actually in the end, he by scoring 38 points with he switched a three pointer near the end of the clock to lift the fans up out of the Coliseum and to victory. There were 7 seconds left, and Mike Pratt for Kentucky actually hit a three-pointer, but the referee nullified the basket, saying that Issel had set an illegal moving screen and then taking the game away, despite the fact that it was, they not usually call it sort of made at the end of the game. So the Colonels coach, Joel Mullaney, said there was, after one of the defeats, a New York sports writer was nabbed by Louisville police for scuffling with a fan. And then Mullaney said, "They got the wrong man. We're the ones who should have been arrested." So great little quote from Joe. And then the Nets, yeah, after that game four, the Colonels did win game five at home. But then game six, the Nets won in a close one. By then, Rick Barry was back and just were able to overwhelm you could kind of point to the Colonels' inexperience here as with Gilmore and Issel being young, and the Colonels were a team that, you know, they would finally win the championship in 75, but they would sort of have these overwhelming regular season teams and have these postseason disappointments until Huey Brown came along and kind of found the right mix.
Absolutely. Oh, by the way, I came out. Touchback would be the name of our.
Oh yeah, there you go. Touchback.
I mean that seems. That would definitely. So there be, we go. Yeah. So we'll start recording that tomorrow, and we just see the episode at the end of the week. So
all right,
it'll be great. Can't wait. Let's break down the.
Why a Tittle? That's a.
Yes. Thing. Yeah. Why? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go. Dick Butkus.
Joe Montana.
I know who Joe Montana is.
Right. We're just talking about guys we know. This is gonna be great. I like this. Yeah. No research either. I just want you and I just get on here and talk.
Yeah. So we do research for this.
No, this is all off the top of my head. Okay. I don't know about you, but yeah, I don't do anything. I don't know about Fair you, enough. But, I just come here and, turn the mic on and just explode. Okay. 1973 Golden State Warriors, 47 wins, 3.12 SRS over the Milwaukee Bucks, 60 wins, 7.84 SRS. This is a Milwaukee Bucks team that we've talked about many times during this podcast. A very, very awesome team that got upset by this Warriors team. This was Rick Barry's first year back in the NBA. They also had Jeff Mullins, Cassie Russell, Nate Thurman, but it was Rick Barry in a large way with his team. And the Bucks, of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bob Dandridge, Oscar Robertson, Lucius Allen. So just a really awesome Bucks team that won a ton of games and looked like they were on their way to the NBA Finals, and it just did not work at all. There was possibly some mitigating circumstances. A few months before this, there was a mass murder of Kareem's Islamic teacher's family in Washington, D.C. This was in a townhouse that Kareem had given them. So obviously it was a stressful situation. He was getting protection from authorities, Kareem, because he was kind of worried about his own life as well. But yeah, it was supposed to be Milwaukee series all the way. There was supposed to be another Bucks Lakers West final. That was what's going to happen. And the Lakers, they were an awesome team this year as well. So it looked like that was in the cards. This is the series we're going to get. We can't wait. The Milwaukee came out and they won game one by 20 points. They won game three by 20 points as well. The Warriors got kind of lucky in game two, 195-92. So it looked like, okay, yeah, for the most part, the Bucks are killing them. The Warriors are kind of getting lucky here and there. Game four, the Warriors win 102-97. Game five, the Warriors win 100-97. So as you can tell, there's all these really small margins. And then game six, the Warriors just, 100-86. Just an incredible display by the Warriors. The Bucks scored just, of course, 86 points. The easiest triumph for the Warriors this entire, series. Another thing, too, that the 68-win Boston Celtics were about to get knocked out of the playoffs, too. You're looking at a Bucks team that had they, toppled the Lakers, they could have been in prime position to win that, title again. And a real key to the series, defensive work of Nate Thurman. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has mentioned at times, and I believe we mentioned in this series as well, that he was one of the toughest defenders he's ever faced. Kareem shot just 43% in the series and averaged, by his standards, 22.8 points per game. Very disappointing. Oscar Robertson, though, found a little bit of his little fountain of youth. He had 21.2 points per game, but it was clear that the whole idea was let's stop Kareem and let everybody else kill us. And yeah, 22 points for Kareem is stopping him. And then the Balance Warriors, they were led by Barry's 16.5 points per game, but they had six players average double figures for that series. So it was really just a situation of kind of a bunch of really good guys coming together and toppling, you know, an all-star team led by one of the greatest ever in Kareem. But yeah, just a really, really cool series to see, and just a huge upset, and one that we've mentioned before that, you know, if it goes the other way and Kareem wins that series, then, you know, there's a different idea of maybe, you know, what his all-time stature is or whatever, because this is a team that probably should have won this and it just didn't happen for one reason or another.
Yeah, and this is the only time that Kareem's team ever lost in a playoff series to a team that did not make the finals.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so of the, you know, I believe 18 times he made the playoffs, 17 times, you know, they either won or they lost in the finals, or they lost to a team that made the finals. So, yeah, so a few that we've kind of gone through before, so we're just going to talk about briefly. The 1973 Eastern Conference Finals, the Knicks beating the Boston Celtics. This, we discussed this a lot in the Bob Ryan episode about the Celtics. The Knicks had 57 wins and a 6.07 SRS. The Celtics had a 68 wins and 7.3 SRS. So the SRS is fairly close. So the wins is a big difference. The Celtics just, you know, were a little bit overachieving, I think, of a team and weren't, you know, quite that good. And but another huge thing is that John Havlicek was hurt during the series. The Celtics were down 3-1. They tried to rally, but they ran out of gas in game seven. Havlicek did play, but was barely able to move one of his arms to lift it up to be able to play, which obviously hinders his ability to play basketball
slightly. Yeah.
And then in 74, the NBA Finals, the Boston Celtics over the Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics won that series in game seven. We've talked about that in our Kareem episode and also talked about that in the same Bob Ryan Celtics episode. But basically the Bucks' depth had been drained by then due to injuries and due to age. Kareem was awesome, but everyone else just around him, you know, wasn't quite able to perform up to the task. And even Kareem sort of struggled with double teams and triple teams in game seven as the Celtics changed their strategy to win that series. And an epic game six that with Kareem hitting a game winning shot. But then game seven, the Celtics won 102-87. And then 1975, the NBA Finals, the Warriors, Rick Barry again with these playoff upsets, 48 wins for the Warriors, 2.86 SRS, beating the Washington Bullets with 60 wins and a 6.53 SRS in 75. They swept them, and this is discussed in our Rick Barry episode. But the games were fairly close. The two of them were by 1 point. Game one was by 6 points, and game three was by 8 points. So, you know, fairly narrow margin despite the sweep in that series.
Yeah, it's just just another this is Barry guy is just a pain in the ass, isn't he?
Yes, like,
in more ways than one to a lot of people still to this day. But yeah, really, really at his peak pain in the assness in the '70s. But yeah, just remarkable that he comes up so often in these. It must be the free throws or something. I don't know, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, but it's I'm sure. Yeah, hit your free throws, and you'll mm-hmm. win a lot of playoff upsets.
Maybe that's the his point when he talks to these guys. He goes, hey, look at all these playoff upsets I had. It's all because of the free throws. But another one too. Spirits of St. Louis, 1975. They had 32 wins and a negative 4.02 SRS, which is not good.
No.
By the way. But it didn't matter because they beat the New York Nets, who had 58 wins and a 6.58 SRS, which is just insane. A negative 4. What are you doing? But they did it. The Spirits, they had moved from Carolina, of course. They were basically an expansion team. They had Marvin Bad News Barnes, Freddie Lewis, Maurice Lucas, Gus Gerard, and Barnes, Lucas, and Gerard were all rookies as well. So, I mean, that's a team of, like, guys that are good or would become good, but we're talking rookie seasons, you know, just really young guys as well. But the Nets themselves, you know, they're the defending champs, which that's one little caveat there, but they're also very young themselves. Julius Erving, Billy Paltz, John Williamson, Larry Keenan, so... you know, you still have Julius, you're the defending champs, but you're still a young team as well. But there's really just no way that they should have lost to this team, especially the Spirits. They lost 18 of 22 to reach 24-48, but won 8 of their last 12 games to sneak into the playoffs in the last second. Yes, and by the way, in case you didn't notice, they had 32 wins, which if you're counting at home, they're below 500. So the Nets... you know, defending champs, and they beat the Spirits 11-0. The average defeat was 19 points throughout the season as well. So it was like there was just no chance that this was going to happen. And believe it or not, it did. You know, New York wins the first game 111-105. St. Louis comes back game two 115-97. St. Louis then game three 113-108. St. Louis game four 189, and then they finish it out in game five 108-107. You know, Don Adams is a guy that's mentioned a lot as one of the big reasons for this. He was a journeyman forward who was waived in the middle of the season by the Detroit Pistons, and he made a significant contribution to the Spirits team because they signed him for the ABA minimum $200 per game, which is life-changing money there. He immediately brought an element of toughness and savvy to the team. He was made fun of as an old man. He was fat and balding. He was described as portly, but it didn't matter because he was kind of a he was a tough guy. He punched out Sven Nader after he'd thrown down Marvin Barnes, so he kind of gained his little bit of respect from the team. And as well as that, his physical defense, it frustrated Irving throughout the playoffs, and he fit right in with the style of the young Spirits, you know, who had Lucas and Gerard and some other guys who were, you know, tougher guys, but it just really worked that they had this kind of older veteran tough guy to kind of be the man, you know, to really kind of bring it all together. But yeah, it's just incredible of how easy it was. You know, the Spirits, they erased a 9-point deficit with 5 minutes left. They were only down by one at the end. Inbound pass went to Irving, who came under intense defensive pressure from Dom Adams, who we mentioned. And then Irving dribbled the ball off his leg and into the backcourt. And that was kind of it for the Nets, which is just an incredible thing. Freddie Lewis, he had a 20-foot game winner at the buzzer at the top of the key over Brian Taylor. Freddie Lewis, had the Spirits' last 10 points in the game as well. He averaged 26.2 points per game in the 1975 play. And helped the Spirits stay competitive against the eventual champion Kentucky Colonels in the Eastern Conference Finals as well. So just did an incredible run for the Spirits of St. Louis, one that Bob Costas till his day still calls one of the most dramatic moments of his career, because he was the commentator for the Spirits of St. Louis, which many people know that he kind of got a start there. But yeah, it was just incredible that they were able to do that considering where they were the rest of the season. I mean, they were just not a very good team at all and were able to beat the defending champions in just an unbelievable it in a lot of ways. It reminds me of, you know, I guess you're not talking about defending champs, but that Nuggets Sonics upset, maybe the Warriors Mavs one in 2007. So just a few of these just incredible upsets of teams that just had probably no business beating the teams that they did beat. Yeah. But
you know, even the Mavs Warriors one, if you look a little bit closely, was at least sort of understandable in terms of the matchup. And then in fact, like the last 20,
right.
Yeah, the last 20 games of the season, the Mavs had actually not played all that well, and the Warriors had played really, really well. So, you could kind of see that one coming. There was really nothing here that you could kind of see coming. But yeah, Barnes just was awesome during this series. He averaged 30.8 points and 14.1 rebounds for the playoffs. He had 37 and 18 in game two. That was also the same game where Wendell Ladner famously threw his shoe, fell off his foot, and then he famously Freilus was dribbling away from Wendell, and then he was hobbling around one shoe, and then he just threw it right at his back, hit Freddie in the back, and then Freddie turned around and was about to take a swing at whoever hit him with the shoe, but then he turned and saw it was Wendell, and he just smiled. So good old Wendell Ladner. But the fact that Barnes was just completely awesome in that series. They just kind of came together. They had some veterans, Lewis, obviously, who was a, you know, really key player for the Pacers, who had come over to St. Louis. Also, they had Steve Snapper Jones at the end of his career, Mike Barr and Adams, as we mentioned. They were able to just kind of get that right mix and get hot at the right time, and did pretty well against the Colonels until Freddie Lewis injured his ankle. It looked like it was going to be they had something and they were going to build the momentum toward it and be this great team and maybe, you know, have the success in St. Louis that would get them into the NBA, and didn't really happen, unfortunately. So,
but they the owners were okay. So
yeah, that's true. The owners did fine. So
not for the players, maybe, but the owners were, I think, okay with the deal that they got.
Although, yeah, I mean, a lot of the players were, you know, good successes in the NBA. Right. Obviously, you know, Maurice Lucas was a successful. Marvin Barnes would have been successful if it hadn't been, you know, for all the stuff that he went through. So, I mean, you know, most of the players ended up okay, but yeah, but you're right. Obviously, the owners were the ones who made out for sure. So, Western Division Finals, the Pacers with 45 wins, 1.14 SRS, beat the Denver Nuggets, 65 wins, 6.63 SRS in 75. This is the kind of the final run for the Pacers. Most of the older guys are gone now. It's George McGinnis' team. He has 30.6 points per game in this series, just totally destroys everything. Billy Keller, Darnell Hellman are still there, and then Billy Knight and Lynell Moore are both rookies on this team. The Nuggets, Larry Brown has come to coach the team. They have a really deep team. Matt Calvin, who's a terrific guard, Mike Green, Ralph Simpson, another great shooting guard, Byron Beck, who's a good defender and rebounder, Bobby Jones, who would later be a famous great defender, sixth man for the 76ers, and Dave Robish. All those guys scored in double figures, and they were 40-2 at home during the season. A really incredible team. Obviously, Denver has that, known for that home court advantage. And this would be the year before they would actually change the team over with David Thompson and Dan Issel, and famously make the finals and then have some pretty good runs in the 70s. So this is sort of the proto version of that team. And the Pacers were sort of known for some of these playoff upsets in the late part of their run as a dynasty. In 73, they upset a much stronger Stars and Colonels teams, a much better SRS during the season, even though the records were similar. But that was probably a case of a veteran team that probably didn't go that hard in the regular season. Here, I think it was mostly just McGinnis. I mean, McGinnis in game one had 39 points, 22 rebounds, 8 assists, 5 steals. Game three had 32 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists. This is all from Remember the ABA, by the way. In game seven, he had 40 points, 23 rebounds, 8 assists, and made 3 steals. Scored 10 of Indiana's 14 points, and basically had a key 3-pointer with about 4 minutes left to give them some breathing room and allow them to seal the game. But this is honestly a really kind of weird, crazy series. There's the Pacers imported their super mascot Dancing Harry to put a pregame hex on the Nuggets in game two, and then the Nuggets responded in game six by hiring Rabada, the Wicked Witch of the West, to put a...
These are real things, by the way. We're not making this up. No. You can Google it. There's actual proof. This is a real thing.
Yes, so. to put curses on Darnell Hellman and George McGinnis and cast spells behind the Pacers bench. So, some fun stories. This is a very ABA series for sure.
Absolutely. We'll move on now. Phoenix Suns, 1976 over the Golden State Warriors. The Suns had 42 wins, a 0.59 SRS. The Warriors had 59 wins and a 6.23 SRS. So take that, Rick Barry.
Hit your free throws.
Damn it.
Finally.
I have no idea if he had his free throws in this series, so don't quote me on that. But the Warriors, of course, had Rick Barry, Phil Smith, Jamal Will, Clifford Ray. The Suns had Paul Westphal, Alvin Adams, Curtis Perry, Garhead. And actually, believe it or not, they were second in SRS in the West and sixth overall. So just a weird year where just nobody was really that great. I mean, yeah, the Warriors were 0.59 is sixth best SRS in the league, which is not great. Just a quick recap of the games. Game one, the Warriors won 128-103. Suns came back in game two, won 108-101. Game three, the Warriors 99-91. Game four, high scoring affair, Phoenix 133-129. So it's kind of back and forth at this point. Golden State 111-95 to kind of take control of the series. And then game six, they really shocked the Warriors, winning 105-104. And then game seven, the big game seven, Suns 94-86 over the Warriors. It's just an insane game as well. Just an insane upset for the Suns as well. Just of how incredible it was. Rick Barry and Ricky Silvers got into a fight and punched each other early in the fourth quarter. Barry only had 6 points in the second half, and he quoted, as only Rick Barry could say, "You can't score when you don't have the ball." Eric, you are correct. With Rick Barry going nearly 30 minutes without a basket, with Smith scoreless for 20, the Warriors insisted on either standing still or flinging the ball around schoolyard style. It was incredible to watch, wasn't it? Phoenix's Keith Erickson said at the end of the Suns' win, "The Warriors went away from everything they've done for 2 years, one-on-one, forcing shots, scrambling, fouling, panic. When they started cracking, I knew." So
yeah, and that was the end of a Warriors team that looked like incredibly, like it had all these great young players and looked like it was going to be a team that, could really be a great dynasty for the rest of the decade. And then it all, they would end up trading everyone. They would trade away Jamal Wilkes or lose Jamal Wilkes, Gus Williams, and eventually Robert Parrish, who would join the team soon and then leave the team. And, all those guys, of course, become important parts of great teams over the next few years. So. Oh, well.
at least Rick threw everybody under the bus on the way out, so that worked out pretty well.
So a couple
more, he's not wrong though.
Definitely not wrong. So a couple more series that we talked about are the Bullets and 76ers from 1978. I talked about this on Dr. J's show with Curtis Harris. So we're going to talk more about this series on upcoming Dr. J show with Curtis Harris. But basically, the 76ers were coming off their year as, you know, where they'd gone to the finals but lost to the Blazers, and the Bullets were just a 44-win team. But they had good veterans, Alvin Hayes and Wes Unseld. They'd been a very good regular season team a couple years before, so you know it may have just been sort of a, you know, Bullets were the Bullets had were not as working as hard during the regular season as they did during the playoffs, or maybe, you know, a case of the Sixers still quite not fitting together until, you know, they kind of had to change things around in order to really you know, become the great team that they would become in the 80s. But whatever happened, it was, you know, despite the disparity in SRS, the disparity in the quality of the teams may have been exaggerated by that a little bit. But and then next we have the same year, the Western Conference semifinals, the Supersonics beating the Portland Trailblazers. Talked about this on our Bill Walton show, but basically, you know, Walton was, this is when he finally, you know, suffers his final foot injury. He's gone after game two, and the Blazers have no, you know, answer for him. They start 50-10 at the season. Walton misses most of the regular season, and they only win. They go 8-14 the rest of the way. So, you know, they were very dependent on Walton, obviously. And once that happened, the Sonics were able to beat them and reach the finals to face the Bullets and have a series that we've talked about on some on previous shows as well. So.
I move on now to the 1981 season, the Kansas City Kings and the Houston Rockets. We'll talk a little bit here about the Kings. They had 40 wins and a negative 0.49 SRS. First round, they beat the Blazers, who had 45 wins and a 0.52 SRS. They beat them 2-1. And then in the Western Conference semifinals, they beat the Suns, who had 57 wins and a 4.83 SRS. They beat them in 7-4-3 as well. So just a really cool upset for the Kansas City, and they would be going on to face the Rockets, who also found their way here from some upsets as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The Rockets beat the Lakers in the first round, famously the defending champions, 2-1. Of course, you know, like 3-game series, you can't really get much out of that. But the Rockets had 40 wins, a negative 0.20 SRS. So basically, the Rockets and the Kings both have the same record, but the Kings had a tiebreaker to be the fifth seed, and the Rockets were the sixth seed technically. So, and then they beat the Spurs, who were a 52-win team, 2.18 SRS in 7 games as well. So the Kings upset was more impressive from a, you know, because the Suns were the number one seed and had a stronger SRS. But and also the Kings dealt with some injuries to be able to you know, jug along. Scott Wedman and Ernie Grunfeld really stepped up for them in that series. Walter Davis struggled, where for the Rockets, it was Calvin Murphy really stepped up in the series. He had, we talked about this game seven before, but he had 42 points in game seven of that series to beat the Spurs. Moses Malone also stepping up, particularly in game five. He had 34 points and 36 in game six, even though the Rockets lost that game. And Malone had 28.1 points per game in the series, Murphy 25.4, and George Gervin 27.1 for the losing Spurs in that series. So the actual Western Conference Finals with the sixth seed Rockets versus the fifth seed Kings. This is, of course, this is during a time in which only six teams make the playoffs, not eight as we're used to. So the bottom two teams in that bracket, the actual series itself was kind of a snoozer. The Rockets won 4-1, and there wasn't really that much to it. But the journey to get there was very interesting.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com. You can check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, enjoy any of our podcasts, but particularly our Basketball Mysteries, the 1970s series, leave us a rating and review on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcast. And thanks again for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.